The bus rattled up the road, though not as quickly as we had hoped. It rolled cautiously through a wide puddle some 20 feet ahead. Then, seeming to grow bolder as it approached our man-made lake, it speeded up, spraying the water in high sheets of backward waterfalls into the forest. We could hear the students squealing with delight, but instead of the graceful glide through the puddle that its occupants were expecting, the bus emitted a tremendous crack and careened drunkenly into our trap. For a moment it swayed, and we held our breath, afraid that it would topple over. Then it sputtered a last murmuring protest and died, its left front wheel in our ditch, its right wheel in the gully, like a lopsided billy goat on its knees. We covered our mouths and shook with silent laughter. As the dismayed driver opened the rear emergency exit, the rain poured down upon him in sharp needled darts. He stood in the doorway, looking down with disbelief at his sunken charge. Then, holding on to the bus, he poked one foot into the water until it was on solid ground before gingerly stepping down. He looked under the bus. He looked at the steaming hood. He looked at the water. Then he scratched his head and cursed. "How bad is it, Mr. Grimes?" a large, freckled-faced boy asked, pushing up one of the cracked windows and sticking out his head. "Can we push it out and fix it?" "Push it out? Fix it?" the bus driver echoed angrily. "I got me a broken axle here, and a waterlogged engine, no doubt, and no telling what all else, and you talking about fixing it? Y'all come on, get out of there. Y'all gonna have to walk home." "Mr. Grimes," a girl ventured, stepping hesitantly from the rear of the bus, "you gonna be able to pick us up in the morning?" The bus driver stared at her in total disbelief. "Girl, all y'all gonna be walking for at least 2 weeks by the time we get this thing hauled out of here and up to Strawberry to get fixed. Now y'all get on home." He kicked a back tire and added, "And get y'all's daddies to come on up here. Give me a hand with this thing." The students turned dismally from the bus. They didn't know how wide the hole actually was. Some of them took a wild guess and tried to jump it, but most of them miscalculated and fell in, to our everlasting delight. Others attempted to hop over the gullies to the forest to bypass the hole. However, we knew from much experience that they would not make it. By the time most of the students managed to get to the other side of the ditch, their clothes were dripping with the weight of the muddy water. No longer laughing, they moved spiritlessly toward their homes while a disgruntled Mr. Grimes leaned moodily against the raised rear end of the bus. Oh, how sweet was well-maneuvered revenge! With that thought in mind, we quietly eased away and picked our way through the dense forest toward home. At supper, Mama told Big Ma of the Jefferson Davis bus being stuck in the ditch. "It's funny, you know, such a wide ditch in one day. I didn't even notice the beginning of it this morning. Did you, children?"
"No," we chorused.
"You didn't fall in, did you?"
"We jumped onto the bank when we thought the bus would be coming," said Stacy truthfully.
"Well, good for you," approved Mama. "If that bus hadn't been there when I came along, I'd probably have fallen in myself." The boys and I looked at each other. We hadn't thought about that.
"How'd you get across, Mama?" Stacy asked.
"Somebody decided to put a board across the washout."
"They gonna haul that bus out of here tonight?" Big Ma inquired.
"No, ma'am," said Mama. "I heard Mr. Granger telling Ted Grimes, the bus driver, that they won't be able to get it out until after the rain stops and it dries up a bit. It's just too muddy now."
We put our hands to our mouths to hide happy grins. I even made a secret wish that it would rain until Christmas.
Mama smiled. "You know, I'm glad no one was hurt. Could have been, too, with such a deep ditch. But I'm also rather glad it happened."
"Mary!" Big Ma exclaimed.
"Well, I am," Mama said defiantly, smiling smugly to herself and looking very much like a young girl. "I really am." Big Ma began to grin. "You know something? I am, too." Then all of us began to laugh and were deliciously happy.
Later that evening, the boys and I sat at the study table in Mama and Papa's room,
attempting to concentrate on our lessons. But none of us could succeed for more than a few minutes without letting out a triumphant giggle. More than once, Mama scolded us, telling us to get down to business. Each time she did, we set our faces into looks of great seriousness, resolved that we would be adult about the matter and not gloat in our hour of victory. Yet just one glance at each other, and we were lost, slumping on the table in helpless, contagious laughter. "All right," Mama said finally. "I don't know what's going on here, but I suppose I'd better do something about it, or you'll never get any work done." It occurred to us that Mama might be preparing to whip us, and we shot each other warning glances. But even that thought couldn't dampen our laughter, now uncontrollable, welling up from the pits of our stomachs and forcing streams of laughter tears down our faces. Stacy, holding his sides, turned to the wall in an attempt to bring himself under control. Little Man put his head under the table, but Christopher John and I just doubled up and fell upon the floor. Mama took my arm and pulled me up. "Over here, Cassie," she said, directing me to a chair next to the fireplace and behind Big Ma, who was ironing our clothes for the next day. I peeped around Big Ma's long skirts and saw Mama guiding Stacy to her own desk. Then back she went for Little Man, and picking him up bodily, set him in the chair beside her rocker. Christopher John she left alone at the study table. Then she gathered all our study materials and brought them to us along with a look that said she would tolerate no more of this foolishness. With Big Ma before me, I could see nothing else, and I grew serious enough to complete my arithmetic assignment. When that was finished, I lingered before opening my reader, watching Big Ma as she hung up my iron dress, then placed her heavy iron on a small pile of embers burning in a corner of the fireplace, and picked up a second iron already warming there. She tested the iron with the tap of her finger and put it back again. While Big Ma waited for the iron to get hot, I could see Mama bending over outspread newspapers, scraping the dried mud off the old field shoes of Papa's, which she wore daily, stuffed with wads of newspaper over her own shoes to protect them from the mud and rain. Little Man beside her was deep into his first grade reader, his eyebrows furrowed in concentration. Ever since Mama had brought the reader home with the offensive inside cover no longer visible, Little Man had accepted the book as a necessary tool for passing the first grade. But he took no pride in it. Looking up, he noticed that Big Ma was now preparing to iron his clothes, and he smiled happily. Then his eyes met mine, and silent laughter creased his face. I muffled a giggle, and Mama looked up. "Cassie, you start up again, and I'm sending you to the kitchen to study," she warned. "Yes'm," I said, settling back in my chair and beginning to read. I certainly did not want to go to the kitchen. Now that the fire no longer burned in the stove, it was cold in there.